shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie You Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. And boy, does Hollywood ever. This week's episode is Gods of Egypt. And before I introduce everyone, I just want to let people know, when we do our recaps of, like, what are the worst, like, so bad it's bad movies we've seen, this is a contender. This is right up there. It's not Lady in the Water.
No, yeah, no.
It's not Lady in the Water, but it's in that tier of movies. I'm Alex Dunbar. Joined, Jack Estabrook
is
here.
It's lettuce!
I thought that one was coming. Cody Wolf is here.
I don't have any. I just realized there's like no catchphrases on this movie.
Well, it's weird. There's like,
that's why Jack went with
there's
it.
There's like
lettuce.
Catchphrases, but they're like 90s action movie catchphrases that don't really make sense when someone's like, how are we going to get him? Let's go fishing.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, okay. Yeah. Like, and for the next 10 minutes, I was like, I don't know
made
what
no
that
sense.
Meant.
Nothing
yeah.
in the whole... Last nothing section makes, of the movie.
Basically, man, let's do that thing we did earlier.
Yeah, I guess.
It's to show that they're friends and they are working together.
They have in-jokes now. They've been together for a while.
Yeah.
For like a whole 2 days, because isn't that how long it takes his little sweetheart to cross the plains of death to get to the final gate? And
the timing of
that's
this
like
movie
they,
was...
That's like, that's their...
Well,
that's
wait,
the
wait,
team
wait, let me introduce everyone before we get into the impossible timeline of this film. Christy Smorrow is here rejoining us for another sword and sandal epic.
Yes,
and
I feel like I have to take back everything bad I said about Hercules because it seems like a cinematic masterpiece now after watching this.
I would watch Hercules 20 times before
absolutely.
I would watch this again. Yeah. And of course, Nick Neward is here.
This is the worst episode of Game of Thrones I've ever seen.
There were so many things that I kept pointing out.
A yeah. whole episode in Dorne, come on. And no Peter Dinklage.
It kind of felt like someone was, like, again, in the, like, how a movie comes together, like, oh, this is 300 meets Game of Thrones meets,
Thor.
I don't, yeah, like, Thor.
It was trying to be, like, yeah. like, halfway through, I thought, oh, this wanted to be Thor, and thought, we can do it better.
Yeah,
it's like
they
what
couldn't
do no. with Egypt, you know, like kind of a modernized looking, stylized.
With no Egyptians.
Yeah, with no Egyptians.
Oh, we should talk about that before we get into it. This movie,
just to start right
even
off
before
bat.
Anyone saw it, they were already, the director and the producers were backtracking quickly mm-hmm. on how white this movie is.
This movie is whiter than a Cracker Factory's board of directors.
Yeah.
It's whiter than a Trump rally.
Yeah, yeah. It really. Yeah. I was going to make the joke.
It's whiter
on Twitter.
Than an episode of Lawrence Welk.
It has the diversity of an episode yeah. of Dukes of Hazzard. You know, like there's no like it's just
but without,
white,
but without the plot logic.
Yeah, that's true.
There is quite a good amount of diversity in the accents.
Oh,
and I know. We'll get it to Gerard.
Yes.
Even within yes. certain performances, a single performance would have a dynamic range of accents, which you'll say.
I meant to text Cody.
Dynamic range of accents.
If you yes. haven't listened to our Pompeii episode, people at home, listen to Pompeii before this one. I feel like this is a companion piece to Pompeii with a sort of like, hey, actors, bring an accent to share. You know?
Just not you, Kiefer Sutherland. Just
yeah. Yeah, whatever. You know what? Just talk however you feel like talking.
This is also another movie like Hercules where we have an unnecessary narrated character. Like, I was there, and I'll tell the story.
That's
and then
right.
we yeah. never yeah. see him as an
yeah.
adult.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why, because we're seeing the story through our own eyes as the audience. So what the hell do we need him for?
He doesn't wrap it up at the end either. Like, oh, that was a,
yeah,
that's how
like,
it happened.
Stop.
It was just like, yeah.
yeah.
It's just there was a beginning narration that never went back to.
No, there was an end narration.
Was it added in post, though, to make it less confusing?
But it's end narration where he's narrating over his character, who is still a young character,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is like, what?
You never see
the
narrator who references, yeah, that was me when I was younger, but then you never see the old version.
Yeah, he just continues. It's like an episode of, like, The Wonder Years, where he continues talking over his young life, but with no frame of reference.
Yeah.
yeah.
Even How I Met Your Mother finally shows you old Ted.
That's true. And the other point that Alex Proyas, the director, had to backtrack on before this even came out was he was frantically talking about how, this isn't based on our Egypt, this is an alternate reality Egypt, because I think they realized people were going to be like, okay, I, like, for example, I know almost nothing about mythology, Egyptian mythology. I know, I was thinking as I was watching this. I mean, my basis of Egyptian mythology begins and ends with Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know? So, but I could see why people would be like, oh no, 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 this is not okay. Like,
No, it's not.
So they back. So before even anyone had set eyes on the movie, it came with two disclaimers. You know, to warn.
You know it's going to be bad when there's disclaimers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to do. I'm going to do my best to try to guide us through this. And this wasn't on the level of The Counselor, but this was another like. Better have the Wikipedia page open while you're watching it. Because
halfway through, I gave up on trying to follow the plot.
Yeah, who people were, like what?
Well, the only confusion that I had was that. Like I thought, I was trying to figure out where, because based on our conversations, it was seeming like I started watching the film last. So okay. I was behind everybody else. So I was waiting to get confused and wasn't.
Yeah, I noticed. I think there was a lot of dragging our heels on actually getting around to watching.
There was stuff. Yeah. Yes. Yes, there was. I was at the red box and my finger recoiled twice. No. I think all three of us
started right around the same
time. The plot dressing was ridiculous. But at the end of the day, there really was no plot. It's bad guy wants to collect god body parts to make himself more powerful. And
yeah, but you don't realize that until
well, it's explained at the end.
Very late.
But that's when he cut the wing off, I said, oh, what's he just like collecting that or collecting the wing? Because it purposely showed the wing hits the ground and then turns into a piece of metal. And I was like, oh, he's probably going to collect that.
I didn't even think that.
I'm actually just thinking about that right now. He held the brain, was holding on to that brain.
I was like, you bet he's going to use that brain.
Yeah, that's finally when I realized he was collecting things.
Yeah,
that was the point I realized it. All right, well, let's start off
with... But to be fair, I had to guess that, and it was probably like a percentage that at least one of us was going to guess it accurately, because I wasn't really like...
I just figured he was just killing all the... Taking all the power from all the other gods so that he wouldn't have any
challenges.
Yeah.
Well, that's also a very logical assumption.
Which made me even more. Well, we'll get there. Logic plays no part in this movie.
None at all.
But when he actually does collect all those god parts, it doesn't really help him, so there's no point for him to do it anyway.
Well, he gets to fly.
He gets to fly to see Ra, I guess, but that's about it.
Yeah, that seems to be. Well, wait till we get there. We're way ahead in a movie.
And the movie ends, and we're done. Thank you very much.
See you next week.
The premise of the movie is. That in ancient Egypt of this apparently alternate Earth, where I'm doing air quotes,
where everyone's white.
One of the gods was a black guy.
Yeah.
The worst movie I've seen this year has Chadwick Boseman, and probably the best one I've seen so far this year has.
Well, he's an actor of extremes.
He was entertaining in this. He's probably the best part of the movie.
And I will actually say I enjoyed Gerard Butler in this.
Yes,
you can see the point where he realized. Oh, I'm making trash.
Hamming it up.
He stopped caring and just, I'm going to have some fun.
He's the most charming. Chadwick Boseman is probably the most interesting character in the movie, and Gerard Butler is the most charming character in the movie, and they both seem to be aware that they are in a terrible movie.
I feel like Gerard Butler just knows that every time.
Oh, you want me?
Well, I think he's going to be bad. I think Olympus Has Fallen knowing he was going to get an Oscar. I mean, come on.
Well, do you think he went to Olympus Has Fallen thinking he was starting a cinematic universe?
That is a cinematic universe, by the way, I want to see.
So
Egypt Has Fallen.
So in this world, the gods... Some of the gods seem to live
semi-mortal. They like live on Earth and they're like the royal family.
So that actually is from mythology. Early on, Ra was king of Egypt and there like was king on Earth, king of Egypt. There were several steps before it got to Osiris. But the idea that Ra was king and then later Osiris was king and later Horus was king, that actually is from mythology, king on land.
Were they, because in the movie, the gods are above the people... In a literal sense, they are literally
That's not from mythology.
10, yeah, they're like 9 feet tall. Yeah. Okay.
Which looked awful.
They milked every shot too. Whenever our two heroes would like wash up on a shore or like fall from like a high place, they both go like next to each other to like show, oh, he's still tall. It's like we get it.
But they never really look at each other. Like they didn't do the effect well.
No, they didn't sell it. Well, because when you look at like, I'll take the Lord of the Rings movies as an example. They commit to it in so many ways of the props, everything in the whole scene, a lot of
actors,
practical effects.
When you looked at this, you're just like, no, that's just like a CGI scaled down. None of the props seemed to properly scale in relation.
He'd pass a flask to him.
Yeah.
Like, there was a scene where Gerard Butler passes Rufus Sewell a goblet, and that was about the only time I really thought, like, okay, I guess they tried in this scene.
They tried. Like, late, and I'm jumping to really late in the movie, at one point, the thief character throws Horace's other eye. It is the same size in both of the hands. Yeah. Yet, in the world of this movie, Horace is literally twice the size of... It's just very lazy. A poor choice. So Horace is going to be named
King of Egypt.
I was going to say King of the Gods.
Technically, would make him like King of the Gods that are living on Earth.
Yes.
The gods seem to worship Ra as their god. He's like the god of the gods.
That seems... Is that right, Kristen?
That is right.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I'm still a little bit
Ra is like Jay Davidson, the bad guy from Stargate, with that thing behind his head. Because he's supposed to have the red circle. Whenever Ra is drawn, he's got the red circle over his head, so...
I can be a huge geek here. That's actually only one piece of Ra.
Okay.
Like, there's... Egyptian mythology is kind of messed up.
I'm not a mythology geek. It's okay.
I completely am. So there is the sun disk, but the sun disk isn't just Ra. Other people can have the sun disk. Yeah.
Got it.
So they're doing this big coronation ceremony. Everyone's there, and everyone's... By the way, one of my problems with this movie is I think the movie believes that we're all like, yeah, you all know what's going on here, right? You're all totally familiar with Osiris and Horus and his, you know, his uncle Set.
They briefly explained in the narration where, like, their brothers and Set is, like, sent off to rule some other land. It's like...
A cruel, desert, harsh right? land.
It was really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously he's jealous and wants his brother's kingdom, which is like the actual kingdom.
Because then Gerard Butler is what Set. He comes walking into the coronation.
Right.
Just rocking a Scottish accent. I mean, it's not even like, Gerard Butler, can you bring the Scottish accent down to a 7? It's just like, we're going to have you take it to a 10.
Yeah. I think he laid it on thicker than...
Yeah. Which I was like, okay. This is, again, like Pompeii. Some people were doing English accents. Mm-hmm. Some characters seem to be doing, like, a vague Euro accent at one point.
But, you know, it's an alternate reality, so
I guess
who knows what the alternate reality Egyptian accent sounds like.
I feel like a lot of agents were told that, like, this movie was coming together.
It gets weird when you do a movie like this, because whenever you see movies like this or movies that are set in period, everyone always automatically reverts to Shakespearean English-sounding accents. If it's an American-made film.
Right.
So the assumption would be that they would do that in this film, but do they really have to, since we're on the subject of accents? Let's do it. Like, is there a point where just actors can bring their own accent? Obviously, here they failed because actors are changing their accents throughout the course of the film, but...
I think you need some...
Maybe some cohesive uniformity to it. Like the Empire has British accents and the Rebels have American accents.
Yeah, because also you are setting this in Egypt. So, I mean, if you're just watching this...
Egyptian
like,
accents, really.
Yeah, like, how is a guy from the Scottish Highlands ruling the deserts of Egypt?
Maybe when they say Egypt in this universe, they mean the whole world. Because remember, they portrayed Egypt as the disc, the flat earth that would flip, you know, at nighttime, so...
Maybe.
Or maybe if at least... You know, his wife had the Scottish accent too. Then maybe Upper Egypt, the desert, has that accent, and Lower Egypt doesn't. But
they don't even have that.
Or to make Set seem like an outsider, because that was kind of part of his character here.
I think that's way more thought than was put into it.
I think it was Gerard showed up.
No, he's done an American accent, right?
Borderline American accent.
But otherwise,
some are better at it than others.
Yeah.
There's no Hugh Laurie.
So he comes walking in, and at first it looks like he's cool with the coronation ceremony, and
he brings
supportive. He brings a gift.
Gives his all you a hug, like, no, I would miss this for the world.
Horace starts rocking out on the hunting horn. trying to take on, like, a full rock star pose.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
He really committed to that.
Clemens didn't play the saxophone that hard. Like, he just was...
He's getting into that. Just
really lean in. I don't know if that was... Yeah, that was strange.
We're coming up on the first scene where I was, like, giddy like a child.
And so then an army comes walking in, and it's Set's army.
Who all look like Iron Man. They've got the silver and red paint job and the flat
faces.
Yeah,
they're not the only ones in this that wind up looking like Iron Man.
Yeah.
The movie.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Set just didn't come in with his army and be like, hey, I'm taking over. Instead, he like, has this whole ruse where he like lets him blow the horn, which calls the army.
I don't understand like, that.
We have, okay.
It's like a two-minute ruse where he's just like, hey, I'm good to see, I'm glad to see you. Yeah. Here, blow this thing. And, oh, look, my army's here.
I wonder if we should defer to Christy here. Is Set supposed to be, like, devious? Is he, like, a Loki type?
He is. He's the not quite mischievous as Loki, but basically evil. I mean, he is kind of evil in mythology. Horus and Set do have a long-standing rivalry. Set does kill Osiris. You know, there are all those pieces that do fit in.
Okay.
So if you're a nerd like me, then yes, you know Set's going to be the bad guy no matter what, and he's going to kill Osiris and all that.
Yeah.
But no, there was no point in like a two-minute, hey, nice to see you.
And yeah. Well, I almost feel like Gerard Butler was like, I'll do this movie, but I insist on being charming. You know? Like, I'll be your villain, but I insist on people still liking me. Yeah.
And in the stories, he is charismatic. He even gets the god's support against Horus occasionally. Like, they have a really, like, long standing rivalry. So, and it goes back and forth. So there is some of that they work in, but
yeah, this didn't feel like there's a rivalry. It was just like, hey, I'm evil now.
Yeah.
You never knew me to be evil. Very surprised by this. He's like, whoa, that guy's evil now.
Yeah. He keeps saying, like, I looked up to you. You're my, you know, my favorite person in the world or whatever. And
yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's like,
because Set just kills Osiris.
And they bleed gold, so there's an awful lot of gold. Do they bleed gold in Egyptian
That's never
mythology?
Been mentioned that I know of in Egyptian mythology.
That much I was aware. Like, I didn't know who killed him.
Yeah.
And then a fight breaks out where Horus and Set are fighting, and my mind exploded when Horus just straight up Iron Man transformed.
Which they do mention in that narration in the beginning.
Yes, yeah, I guess they did. I guess they had mentioned.
The fight begins, and I was thinking this was going to be like, okay, now here's going to be like this really dumb fight, this sluggishly slow, stupid fight scene. And you know, of course, you know, Horus is going to lose. But then they all of a sudden, I didn't see a lot of or at least I wasn't paying attention to the trailers, I guess, because I wasn't expecting this. So when they like morph into these robots,
turns into a journey,
and I expect Mortal Kombat to start playing, I literally had a moment where I was like, oh my god, this is awesome! And of course it's not awesome, but you know, it's awesome, like bad awesome. I was like, yeah, they're robots! And they were like punching each other and, you know, firing laser blasts at each other, and I was like, this is not in Egyptian mythology at all. They don't morph into robots. Well,
not robots, but yes, animals.
Right.
Well, that I knew.
Yeah.
So,
but that's why I figured.
Because Horus has the bird head and all that. But
that's why I figured when they said they transformed, was they would transform into like a different creature. But when they did the whole
metal
suit, it's like,
I feel like that happens in a lot of movies where they want to make ancient gods cool, so they make them metal, which makes no sense to
me. Makes no sense.
Robots are cool.
Yeah,
even in ancient fake Egypt.
Yeah. And they would literally make them metal because it looks like a heavy metal album too.
It does. It looks like an 80s heavy metal cover. Yeah. Well, and we forgot to mention, we kind of got on it, that there was some narration at the beginning. I think this movie's main character is kind of this pickpocket named Beck, who has a girlfriend.
His girlfriend is like a slave for Rufus Swirl.
Which she ends up being.
Oh, no, that's right, because... Yeah. Oh, now this I don't get. Now, please explain this. Again, I don't know much about mythology, just for the basics. This thing is bugging me. The moment Set becomes king, he kills Osiris, he rips out Horus's eye, he unmorphs back into Gerard Butler, and he's like, all right, everyone, I want you to know that you have to buy your way into the afterlife now. And is that like, I'm sorry, Gerard Butler, I love you, but my impersonation of you does suck.
Yeah, that was from like Russian disguise.
That does suck.
Yeah.
But I wanted to portray the way, you know.
It was kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger doing an impression of Sean Connery.
So anyway. Does the king of the gods dictate how one enters the afterlife?
No.
I know you weigh your heart to the feather, it's based on your life and all that, but you can't just up and say, it's no longer based on the value of your deeds, it's based on how much money you have. I say it, therefore it's true. Like,
no,
he doesn't have that power.
There is...
I was like, that's not...
There's aspects of riches in the afterlife. You know, the pharaohs
take their gold
with them. They take their servants with them so that the servants will do their jobs in the afterlife, things like that. So there is a concept of taking things with you, but no, it's weighing your heart against the feather.
Yeah.
It's not buying your treasures.
Yeah. And
there's treasures that can, you know, they would put scarab beetles over a mummy's heart to try to keep your heart from betraying you when it's on the scales. You know, there are things that treasures will do for you, but no, you don't buy your way in.
Well, Jack mentioned it too. Set rips out Horus's eyes.
Yeah.
Which I was like, whoa, okay.
which is from mythology.
Which is, okay. And that then prevents Horus from transforming.
Yeah, that's not.
Okay.
Well, in this I demand version of the mythology, that's like his where his power comes from is his eyes. Just like the god of knowledge is his brain, that's where his power comes from.
Which they threw in very all of a sudden, like, do you still have perfect aim? Of course I do. And then he misses anyway. Yeah. That made no sense to me.
Right. Yeah, that was weird.
Well, there was something shiny.
Yeah.
He has a glint.
Everyone is very weak to bright lights in this movie.
Yes. It's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's ready for that.
But then,
I was confused. It's the next morning, and, light.
Because then Gerard Butler sets weakness as, just a pit of fire in the desert or something. Isn't that what it was?
Yeah, that made no sense.
It was like his wasn't actually something like
the fire goes down
to
the center of the earth, she says.
Yeah, it was like, but that's like where his power came from. Everyone else was like, I can tear your eyes out. And his mine's just a giant pit of...
Oh, that common weakness.
It felt weird to me that horse is just a physical thing of if I take your eyes out, you got no power. But the eyes remain a physical thing. If someone hands Horace his eye back, he's like, I'm just going to pop it back in. Powers, good to go.
I was totally wishing for it, and it didn't happen. I know I'm fast-forwarding to the end, but the scene where Beck throws the eye in slow motion, and it hits the side of the pyramid that they're fighting on, it starts to roll down, and they both start falling, and I said, that sucker better just randomly land in his skull. It didn't. But I was
I have a problem with that scene. I'm not sure when we get there.
I had about 4 hours
when we get there.
Yeah.
We now get some more narration from the thief, who tells us basically, Set took over everything in Egypt.
Which we didn't need to know because we saw it.
Enslaved everybody.
Yeah, he enslaved everybody. His girlfriend now seems to be in slavery as sort of like a scroll-based secretary/archivist.
And I was just keep the rating down because they didn't want to make her like a prostitute.
Which they imply later on anyway.
Yeah.
I think it was because
they did kind of
to make her like a sex slave, like she's like being horribly treated.
I think
it
was more to be like, oh, this is how he knows to get.
Oh, they need a plot convenience. That's how she knows how to get through the plans to Rufus Sewell's Raw Tower.
Yeah, she's like the archivist for Rufus Sewell, who's back, by the way.
Welcome back. Like, I loved it.
He's an architect. I love him. Working for Set, who is building stuff.
Yes.
And so she's. I don't know, yeah. So I was like, okay.
So now this kid's like, well, I'm going to steal Horace's eye back because I'm a clever thief. And all of a sudden, there he goes and he does it. I was like, wow, well, that was pretty... He goes through an Indiana Jones type scenario.
But it's like a steampunk... It's very steampunk.
It just happens. Yeah, Beck is not in Egyptian mythology.
No. Not that I know of.
I didn't think so.
God, I hope not. Yeah.
If he was, actually, I might have more respect for this movie to be able to work that in, but no.
Because, by the way, he goes over these bridges that are traps. Like, one of them is, like, spinning blades, or like one is, like, Indiana Jones. But the third one... It's just a straight up fall away bridge.
Video game.
It's just straight up run fast because the bridge you're standing on is falling. There's really no trick to it. Right. I was like,
when you're a 10-foot tall god, it takes fewer steps to get through, so you don't have to worry about that.
That's true. Well, and it also I'm gonna have this problem throughout the movie.
They're not giant robots enough.
That's also true. The stakes and the consequences of this movie are never clear and are constantly shifting from what characters need to do or what could happen to characters if things don't go right. Because and many times characters even question they even in the movie are questioning what the stakes and the consequences that are affecting them are.
At this point, he just wants to get Horace's eyes back so that Horace can come back and defeat or get rid of Set so that he can take over.
Right, we're kind of given this stake of if he can get Horace's eye, Horace can take back over.
But we also have the ticking clock, Horace says, I can save your girlfriend.
Well, she's not dead yet.
Yeah. No, we haven't got yet.
But doesn't he make the deal?
No,
he doesn't even give Set the eyeball back out.
That's another stake.
I just want to get through this and finish it. Let's just get this done.
I want the 2 hours of my life back.
In the end, the real power is friendship. The end. See you next episode.
Yeah. So he comes back. The thief comes back from the steampunk pyramid.
Oh, you're right.
To Rufus Sewell's office and his girlfriend. He's like, ha ha. And then Rufus Sewell is like, we're on to you, thief. And he's like, what did you steal? And he hands over something inconsequential. And then Beck has what is an actual line movie. He's like, I stole something else. And he holds up Horace's eye, which then magically
blinds everybody.
Yeah.
And he and his girlfriend take off, except...
She gets killed, of course.
She gets shot with an arrow by Rufus, who appeared to have shot this from, like,
miles
away. Oh, yeah.
I thought this was going to come back. Like, this was, like, the character's gimmick. But, no, at the end, he just kind of...
Because he missed the next turn.
Rufus Sewell needs no gimmick. Being Rufus Sewell is enough.
He just seems to be a really good archer in that one scene.
For that one shot.
Yeah.
So she gets shot in the heart, and she dies. And he brings her to Horace's temple.
By the way, he's
just like hideaway. Drunk, like he's like, no, man.
Well, at this point, too, I should note in all of my notes, I couldn't remember Beck's girlfriend's name, so I just started referring to her as, is it Zaya? I call her knockoff Selena Gomez in all my notes.
He says it a lot.
I feel like Horace is knockoff Aaron Eckhart.
He's knockoff Aaron Eckhart.
I just kept seeing Jamie Lannister.
So he goes. He brings her to Horace, and this is where the stakes get very weird. Because he's like, "Okay, Horace, I'll help you get your other eye back, and you can topple Set if you bring my girlfriend back to life." And Horace, at first, is like, "I can't bring your girlfriend back to life."
Then 10 seconds later, he tries.
Well, and then the kid's like, "Well, then no deal." And then Horace is like, "Well, maybe I can bring your girlfriend." And I'm starting to go, okay, wait, what are we playing here? Like, what is the objective?
Well, and also, too, Horace is like a huge dick. It's just like, in the first scene, he's like, oh, he's the good god, and he's this good. And by this point, he's just miserable, and he's, like, trying to kill Beck for just even being there.
Yeah, like, this is, like, a terrible... Well, they become, like, a terrible, like, buddy cop movie of, like, where they're in conflict, like, a rookie and, like, a veteran, but, like, it never really comes and gels. It never really comes together. I mean, the movie wants you to believe that late in the film they do, but I don't think it's
Theodore Rex all over again.
Oh, this is like Theodore Rex.
It is.
Oh my, if only one, and one of the characters is a robot.
That's true.
Yeah.
So he gives Horace back the one eye he was able to locate.
Yes.
So Horace only has like half his power now, which means he can't fly.
But he can see really far with that eye. They make sure they show that to us two times.
So yeah, so he has some power, but limited power. By the way, I think Horace and the thief have possibly less chemistry than Stallone and his son in Over the Top. And that says a lot, because that was a real absence of chemistry.
That was a real absence of chemistry.
So then Horace says, like, okay, well, I can bring your girlfriend back if I become a god again, because only a god can, like, go and
convince Anubis to let her come back.
But like
even,
I said,
he's even a little vague on it.
Well, he's like, maybe. He's like, maybe. Don't get your hopes up, but maybe.
But apparently it takes real time for this girl to reach the end, because they're like, we got about a week. That's how long it'll take her to get to the eighth gate.
I think
she's got to walk there. Yeah. That's the ticking clock. We have 8 days because if we're going to save her life, we have to get there before she gets to the final gate.
Yeah. So then Beck, the thief, is to Horace like, okay, what do we do next? And Horace is like, we've got to go talk to Ra. So they climb a mountain.
Yes.
And this is really the question I had for Christy, because I'm not as familiar with Egyptian mythology.
Really?
I'm not. Did the sun god Ra have a steampunk spaceship that was in orbit around the Earth?
Don't let us know.
Lasers at a monster.
He did have a boat that did orbit the Earth. Okay. He
pulls
did.
The sun across the sky, doesn't he?
But doesn't
he go inside a worm's mouth at night?
There's
There's
a few different versions of what happens to him at night, of where he goes. But either way, no matter where he goes, he goes into the underworld. He goes through a snake. He goes through a woman. I mean, there's lots of different versions of it.
Sure, woman. Huh?
Yeah. But he does fight Apophis, the chaos demon, every night. So that is there. But no, it is not a steampunk barge. I hate to tell you that.
Okay.
But
piggybacking on that, in ancient Egypt, could humans breathe in space?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely,
could
yes.
they go through the
atmosphere? That is a certain part of Egyptian
mythology. This was a real Superman 4, where like Beck just is flown into orbit.
Yes.
Horace saying, like, yeah, I don't have full powers.
Does this count as a shot of the Earth? I know that's typically at the beginning of a bad movie, but
we had the narration
did get a shot of the Earth.
So
we did get a shot of the Earth, and showing Earth was flat, so maybe.
So Ra has granted...
I thought the Egyptians thought the Earth was round, or is that, like, later when the Greeks come in?
Alternate Egypt.
Yeah, Jim, come on. Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question.
That, you're looking at Chris. I don't
know. There's a lot of like beyond the horizon, edge of the world stuff in
mythology.
In mythology, but I don't know. Well,
since this is based on mythology, we will say that I'm incorrect.
It's mythological. Yeah. But so Ra has granted Horus the ability to fly, just so he can get up there with Beck and speak to him, and he basically says,
"God, what?"
Well, Beck has to hide in.
In his
Horus'
shadow,
and then nothing ever happens.
No, yeah, there's, that's never paid off.
I thought that was kind of cool, because Ra's the sun, stay in my shadow, why, oh my god, like he gets burned. I thought that was going to be something more than just a window dressing, just to say, remember, Ra's the sun.
No. Yeah.
But every other time they want to show it, he just grows to be like a flaming giant and makes this stupid face.
Yeah. Yeah, it never.
I was like, oh, yay, grew big!
So Ra is then says to Horus, he's like, well, first he's like, why are you lugging around that mortal? Which I'm like, it's a pretty valid question. I don't know why Beck had to come up to the spaceship.
I think he would have killed him after he gave him one eye. He's like, you know, I could do just as well with one eye as I can with two, so be gone, stab.
Because Beck knew how to get into Seth's
pyramid. That's the deal, yep.
Well, but I think Horus also could have said to Beck, hey, dude, just chill here. I gotta go up to the spaceship.
Right. Yes. Like, sit on this mountain where you'll be fine. Don't come up to a
super dangerous for me to bring you. It's gonna be more dangerous for me to bring you with me than for you to hang here.
Nah, he can go below decks and land on a giant pillow. Is that supposed to be like Ra's sex den, by the way? I don't know.
I don't think anyone ever thought that except for you, Jack.
He landed on a fluffy silk bed. I was like, what? Wow, what is going on there?
People have beds.
He fights a giant worm all night. He fires lasers at a giant worm all night. What the hell is he? When is he gonna sleep?
During the day.
During the day.
Well, he's dragging the sun during the day.
Puts it on a little.
He's like turning that little crank thing or whatever it was. I don't know.
That's true. There's not a lot of downtime. But like Horus says, or Ra says to Horus, so what do you want? What do you need to come up here for? And Horus is like, I just need to fill this flask. And Ra's literally like, no one's stopping you. You can do what you want, you know.
From the water that's floating in space just around this ship that this they didn't space. Fly well, through to get water? To the ship.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I didn't totally get that.
It's magic
like,
water.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the water only works if you go down from above, not if you come up from above.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's how it works. Yeah. Stay bone dry.
But, so he
it's
also,
science.
He also right. asks Ra, he's basically like, oh, can you give me my power back? Because I need my power back. I need to fly and stuff. And Ra's like, no. You have to finish your journey, whatever that means. You have to finish your journey.
Yeah, Ra's basically like, you need to figure it out yourself, you know? Like, and Ra's also kind of like, you know, it's almost like this year's presidential election. He might as well be saying, like, look, I don't love Seth, who's kind of the Donald Trump, but I got some questions about you as Hillary Clinton. You know, I don't know. I'm just going to let's just see how this plays out. Right. You know, Ross seems open to the idea of an independent candidate running for God of Egypt.
Well, he plays you're both my kids. I'm sorry. I can't hate you. So you just kind of do what you're going to do. You kind of like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I thought was like, wow, you know, a lot of these problems have been solved. If he just said, Horus, here, take my magical laser, but you got 12 hours before the giant worm returns. Good luck, you know.
Or something, yeah. Well, and then, so then they get their flask of magic space water, and Ra gives Horus space suit power enough just to almost fly back to Earth, but fall the final 10 feet.
Because we needed to see the robot form in the middle of the movie here, because
it's been too long.
Yep. They're gonna start running a lot. So, because it's cheaper to run than it is to CGI a gigantic fox with wings or bird with wings or whatever.
Exactly. And Seth, meanwhile, is destroying all the rebels.
Spent so much money on quality CGI.
How about Seth's chariot that's pulled by scarab beetles?
Good lord.
That thing was awesome. That thing was awesome.
With a scorpion tail in the back.
We need to explain to you what awesome is at some point.
That was awesome.
We're going to get a dictionary.
Well, I like Nick on Twitter last night compared the CGI to like Farscape level, and I would say that's pretty true.
It doesn't even rise. It's Babylon 5.
Oh, yeah. Babylon 5. That's right.
This was industrial.
This was like Babylon 5. It did.
Yeah.
I knew it deep down in my subconscious, but I didn't know the right word for it. Thank you.
I'm jumping
it's
in
Babylon 5.
Little bit. Horus is going to have a fight with some rhinoceros men that I'm sure is a real event.
That happens here, yeah.
But,
And they get thrown off a waterfall.
This looked very Warcraft, and it made me worried. I was worried already, but like this is what the Warcraft movie is going to look like, I bet.
Well, their CGI can't be. That CGI was shockingly bad. Yeah. I mean, it didn't even. It looked like 20 years ago CGI.
It looked kind of like The Sound of Thunder almost.
Well, that, they're
in that future city.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
But that was at least like early 2000s when it was heyday.
I'd say CGI. One step above that.
Yeah. Maybe one step above that. Yeah, this was like.
It just looked.
This was only two steps above Food Fight. Yeah.
Well,
that's
what I could do. Well, everything looked too crisp. That was my problem was like there was no depth in the shot. So
and
the mountains
match.
Are in focus. The buildings are in focus. The people are in focus. The two guys in the foreground are in focus. Everything is in focus.
Yeah.
So everything looks so sharp that nothing looks natural.
Yeah.
Because
it's fake
metal robots, or metal rhinoceros guys and Horus looks.
It's how everything was in focus in alternate Egypt. There was no out of focus.
So this
in alternate Egypt, this won so many Oscars.
Oh God,
yes, in alternate Egypt, this is the Titanic.
You're just seeing it from Horus's view. He's only got
one eye. No depth perception.
So he's got no depth.
I see. Oh, of course.
And it all makes sense.
This is a genius film. My God.
Wouldn't it be amazing if this was like the Saving Private Ryan of some alternate dimension? You know, where they're like,
what if there was another universe where everything was 100% the same as it was here, except everyone hated. Let's say any good movie like Inception or any movie that you could think of that's awesome, like The Ten Commandments or whatever, and they love this, and this is the film that's held in reverence, and everyone like
that's. I feel like that is an alternate dimension that exists somewhere.
I feel like that's where Jack is.
That's,
You know, this movie made me smile so much though. Like every time they bust it, I was like, oh yeah, we're gonna get robots. Because in this scene. Is this the scene where like Horus jumps up with the spear and it freezes and it does like the bullet time 360? I was like, yeah! It was so stupid. I loved it.
Sometimes I think Jack is a 12-year-old boy who watches films.
This movie made me giddy. I loved
Somehow
it.
Somehow you are the target audience.
Yeah.
Just constantly shaking my head.
And this is where we find it by
the
way.
When I see this stuff, I just go nuts.
Just
but like, this is
slow,
what.
Sad
because this is what bad film should be. It should be so ridiculous that you're like, why?
But you know what's funny? Is this movie takes it so seriously and it plays
it
so
better.
Straight.
I know.
There were a couple lines I actually wrote down as I was watching this movie. Is this supposed to be funny? Because there were a couple lines that seemed like they were supposed to be jokes but said deadpan. And nobody paused, like...
With no comedic timing.
I
agree.
The only joke in the entire movie that I remember that landed, the only joke that did, and now I'm being very, very kind because it wasn't
funny. Get there, Jack.
Was when Beck says, what would you do to me if I drank from the vial of the water? He said, you'd feel instantly refreshed and then you would die. Wow, it feels odd that the water of creation would kill him. He says, no, I would kill you for stealing my water. And I was like... Oh, I get it. That wasn't funny, but I get it. Like, that's the only time in the movie that I think a joke landed, but that's only because I understood that it was a joke, even though it wasn't funny. If we're on the subject of jokes, joke. And whether or not it's funny.
Yeah, it had the writing of a joke, but Christie's right, it never had the delivery of a joke.
Well, yeah.
It was just, this felt almost like jokes at a table read, or something like that.
There were several. Yeah, I can't think of them now because I think I'm repressing as much as this movie as possible. But there were several lines where I'm like, I think that was a joke, but they've moved on already and didn't give the audience time to laugh. So I don't think they meant it. I don't know.
Right.
And well, I think some of the stuff where the goddess of love is all like. Is all like, her dress is all wet in the swamp. I think that was supposed to get like a couple of laughs, but it wasn't working.
No.
We haven't even mentioned, the goddess of love.
She's the reason why Horus is alive.
She comes kind of back in here because she basically, Shet was going to kill Horus and then she's like, no, don't kill him. If you don't kill him, I'll be with you. I'll be your queen or whatever.
Yeah.
So at this point in the movie, she comes back. She's unhappy with her relationship with Set, obviously. She kind of is aware that Horus has come back now, and Set's like making her do things, like find him and do things she's not happy with, so she like disappears from him.
Well, there's this thing that's kind of like, this kind of like Nicolas Cage's power in Pay the Ghost, where she can go into the alternate world by taking off like the
She can
bracelet.
Go into the
she
land of the dead.
Dead.
She has a if she takes off her bracelet, she falls into the land
These
of the dead.
Demons like grab her.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And but if she then plops that bracelet back on, she pops out of the land of the dead. So she basically...
But somewhere else.
So she essentially uses it like Nightcrawler's power of like popping the bracelet on and off to teleport, I guess.
And is this
By the way, not in Egyptian mythology. Okay. Not at all. She is the goddess of love. She does have connections with the land of the dead, but no, not none of this.
Okay. Okay. And at the same time, we find out that Set is trying to collect...
He goes and kills other gods. He kills like his ex-wife god who has wings.
Who has wings.
And so he's like collecting her power.
Well, this is where I was like, because he cuts it off. Because they have a brief cut. I thought they were going somewhere else
because she basically mentions that he's impotent. And then he kills her. And I thought that was like a secret he was trying to keep or something. And that's why he killed her.
It wasn't clear to me that he was collecting. I thought he was punishing her by cutting off her wings. And I wasn't clear that he actually killed her. Until later. I thought that was his... He does say that he killed her. He says he killed her.
Well, but I'm also not sure if anyone's dead, because dead or alive in this movie seems inconsequential.
Because, understandably...
Also, bodies don't decompose at all.
You get like a week before, you know, you can come right back. That's always, whenever they do that, like oh, we got to bring her back to life. No. She's not going to be... She's going to have some worms, you know, in her brain. She's going to be, like, bloated.
They put her in a stone tomb.
Oh, so the stone tomb is like a refrigerator. It's like
clearly.
It's pretty much.
But, no, there's a lot of confusion at this point in the film because it's obvious that Set is using his army to overthrow other gods. And you could generically assume, well, he's just trying to eliminate the competition, but they've all already pledged their allegiance to him. But in the scene where he cuts off Nephis's wing. He cuts off Nephis's wing. There's specifically a shot. And that means they're wasting screen time on it. So there's a shot where
a lot of wasted screen time.
They could have spent it fixing the mistakes to make a better movie. But anyway, they cut off the feathered wing, lands on the ground, and then instantly turns into like a sword. And I was
into a metal wing.
Well, it just landed on them, but it looked kind of like a sword to me. And I thought, well, what is he going to like use that as a weapon or something? And I said, I wonder if he's collecting god parts.
To me, that was just, oh, it lost its magic because now it's disconnected from her. And I said, I really thought that was her punishment, that he was going to leave her alive but without wings. And it really made no sense.
At this point, anyone's guess is.
Well, even at later points, it's anyone's guess.
Well, somewhere along the way, Horace and Beck get into a fight with these giant, like, sandworm things.
Yes.
And, I like to call them sand snakes because I was. I just say sandworms
because I'm
I have sandworms in my notes too.
The spice must flow.
The goddess of love pops up and like saves them by sweet talking.
Here's where the fishing joke starts in.
Well, because Beck says like, "Oh, have you ever been fishing? Or whatever. When you're fishing, use bait or something like that."
I'll be bait. Okay. There is a funny line. Well, it's not funny.
Well, I don't have my eyesight back fully. I can't throw a spear. Then throw the spear closer.
And Horace, when the goddess of love shows up to help them, Horace is a little uncertain if he wants her help, or he has the classic line of, "Hey, you shared a bed with the guy who pulled out my eyes."
How many times
have we heard that? But she, helps, causes the giant sandworm to turn on itself.
Because she's using her love powers of compassion.
Not in mythology.
Oh. And she now joins their team.
Yes.
Team Horus.
The truth.
That's working its way, walking across the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds out, actually, she's one of the great things about this movie is how unlikable almost all of the characters are.
I don't know if that, I don't think that's on purpose.
I don't know. I mean, because Horus is really unlikable. He's terrible to Beck.
Uh-huh.
The goddess of love is terrible to Beck. And then only after she realizes that her powers don't work on Beck because he's in love with knockoff Selena Gomez, is she then like, "Oh, I guess I'll be decent to you." And it's kind of like, well, really? We're supposed to be rooting for these people, right? I guess.
And I'll say too, at the beginning of the movie, I really thought I was going to hate Beck, but I didn't hate Beck. Like, I really kind of was okay. I liked the character a bit, I think.
Sorry for him a little bit.
I think the love story and everything, it just made him more. Because I just thought he was going to be this annoying thief guy who's... I mean, there's a lot of annoying stuff with him, like jumping around and doing parkour and stuff. But
He winds up, well, I think almost by default, because the Horace character is hard to root for.
Or was a jerk to him. It's just like, and he's still like super optimistic and like, oh, I'm going to get my girlfriend back. And everyone else is like,
And I think he's the only one, again, like his goal of getting his girlfriend back is the only clear goal or stake in the movie. Although if it's realistic or not is constantly in doubt, but it seems to be the only stake.
Because
at one point he even says to the goddess of love, he's like, yeah, Horace is going to bring my girlfriend back to life. And then the goddess of love is like, nope, that's impossible. And I'm throwing up my hands like, well, what are we doing? Like,
And she goes and calls out Horace on that fact, but doesn't tell Beck.
Right, right. Yeah, which, but as an audience, we're like, oh, what? Okay, like the one goal that this movie does seem to have.
To which Horace's response is, come on, we got to save the world. Wouldn't you do it? Come on. And I'm like, what? He's being a jerk. He could have just said, look, I'm really sorry I can't save your girlfriend, but I can save your people. Let's just get this over with. And he probably would have said, crap, that sucks. Well, all right, let's get revenge on that guy that killed her. And I guess that's the best I could get.
So now their thing is they need to get...
treasure anything.
They need to get past the Sphinx.
Yes, they need to know the answer to the riddle.
They need to know the
answer
to the
riddle. Did anyone else just shout the correct answer out the moment he started speaking it?
I couldn't hear the riddle.
Yeah, well, when I saw the movie, I knew that... I didn't want to see it. So just in case I missed anything, I actually watched it with the subtitles. Just to make sure, like, because a lot of the times when I'm watching a movie and I'm not that invested in it, I'll miss something. And I'll be like, oh, wait a minute, I got to rewind it. So obviously, when I'm watching a movie for the podcast, it's not exactly going in, you know it's bad. So I'm like...
I do a similar thing. I watch with wine.
But there you go. That works. But I did hear what he said. Obviously, I could read it. And I was
To interject, by the way, they've also picked up the God of Wisdom.
Let's get back, because this character deserves some coverage.
We're burying the lead now.
They go to pick up the God of Wisdom.
Because they need him to answer the Sphinx's riddle.
The Sphinx's riddle. And maybe the one scene in the movie that works, I thought, was maybe the scene at the God of Wisdom's temple. It was the closest this movie came to succeeding at whatever it was trying to do.
This is the one scene that I do give the movie a little bit of credit for. Although, the two things that I found funny, A, I'm probably the only one, and B, I'm not sure they really did on purpose. The bit with the lettuce...
Because the God of Wisdom is now... What's he doing?
He's cataloging all the world's information.
Okay.
And he's only gotten like 48% of it. He's not finished. He has to collect all the knowledge that there is.
Okay. And he's...
Even something as stupid as describing the biology of a lettuce plant.
There's actually a piece of Egyptian mythology that...
Well, the Egyptians... We're early.
Like Christy Talkjack.
Lettuce is Seth's favorite vegetable, and there's a story that's not exactly G-rated about Horace using lettuce to impregnate Set, and there's some weird stuff going on in Egyptian mythology. So then they've got this lettuce, and that I laughed at. Because...
I feel like you can't just leave it there, but...
I feel like
I was going to say
leave it there, and yet
I'll do a separate episode.
Most confused about is lettuce being Seth's favorite vegetable.
What I was going to say, and I might be dead
who
wrong.
Who says my favorite vegetable is lettuce? This leaf that has no flavor.
I thought now I may be wrong, so I'm going to ask Christy again. Did the Egyptians not think lettuce was an aphrodisiac? That's where I was going with.
I don't know anything about them thinking that. Doesn't mean that they didn't, but I don't know.
I wasn't sure. That's what I was going to say.
So that I found funny because I didn't, but that could have been a complete mistake that they were calling out that Horace totally stuck it to Set. And then that was wrong verbiage, I'm sorry. Did not mean it that way.
Still less confusing than
And then
lettuce being a favorite vegetable.
When Toth calls Beck a stray baboon, baboons are associated with Toth, so he was basically like calling him his little pet. So there was actually a point to the baboon insult, and I thought that was funny.
Okay.
That could have been completely accident.
Yeah, I feel like neither of those things were on purpose. Yeah.
So, and they basically get the God of Wisdom to go along with them, because Beck is like, well, if you don't want to come with us, we'll just tell the Sphinx that you chickened out. And the God of Wisdom's like, oh,
calling out his vanity.
Yeah, I'll come with you. So they bring him to this pyramid, and as we said, like this Sphinx statue.
I kind of liked the way it looked. There's very little compliments I'll pay this film in its visuals. I thought the Sphinx looked really cool, because I was just expecting the statue, and it kind of did their own thing, and I kind of was like, all right.
I feel like I wish it was a robot, though.
If it were a robot, then it that should have been a little more steampunk.
I actually thought this was going to be. This is the one thing where I'm like, well, I guess this could be steampunky and it would make sense. But that was like an organic.
It's just like a rock monster.
Yeah,
yeah.
I liked it. I don't know why. Okay. I just did.
They finally get the answer to the riddle right, and they do make it to. But then what happens?
Because they get to. They're trying to put out the fire.
This is the
fire of the desert. This is where his power is coming from.
I never understood what the heck they were trying to do with this fire. Well, like, why?
This they don't explain.
I think this is where his power comes from.
Seth's power.
If they extinguish his fire, then he doesn't have his power. So they have the vial of water from Ra.
But they have to use the water of creation, which then would destroy the fire.
Yes.
It doesn't really make sense.
And so, but like Seth, like they seem. They seem totally unprepared for that Seth may show up and be like, no, you can't just pour your space water on my fire. And they have no defense for this, really.
Yeah.
And it just turns into like a massacre.
Seth also calls out Horus and he tells Beck, this guy told you that I'm not, that the king is capable of retreating Anubis and bringing back your dead beloved. That's not true.
Again, what are the stakes in this?
Beck is standing there with the flask of space water over the fire. Mm-hmm. Horus and Hathor are trapped. Set has just killed Toth and ripped out his brain. And he's telling Beck, no one can do that. Yeah. It's not like he said, Horus is wrong. He can't do that, but I can, so don't pour your space water on my fire. Yeah, he says, it's not possible. Yeah. What is stopping Beck from just tipping his hand?
That's what bothered me. It's like, there's no reason for him not to still extinguish the fire.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, if you extinguish that fire, you can't get your girlfriend back. Or, like Chris said, I can do it.
Right.
It's just like, oh, well, he can't do it. Oh, well.
I thought maybe, obviously it didn't work. I thought maybe that Seth was trying to say, well, I'm actually a good guy. Horus is trying to fight me. Horus is a bad guy because he lied to you.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm telling you the truth because I'm the good guy, even though it's obvious he's not.
I mean,
that's where I
enslaved everybody, and I don't think that he could have convinced him of that.
And it did come after he ripped out
Toth's
brain.
Yeah, he just killed him.
That's
true.
But come on, that guy had it coming.
Sorry. I will fight you. That was the best character in the
world. He was. No, he was.
So Seth gets the vial from back and dumps it out.
Toth's brain of learning so he could increase his knowledge.
And then the whole pyramid like crumbles around them. And then they just kind of set off.
But why does the pyramid collapse?
I think Seth collapses it to try to kill them.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Oh, because they're trapped in the cage.
Yeah.
But he could have just stabbed them. I guess he wanted to be dramatic.
This is like the Bond villain thing, though, where you have to
I'll give you that.
I got a little confused on like what Horus's powers are, because he does seem to now have some powers in this sequence.
Well, at the end of the movie, obviously they explain it, but I'm the same way. I'm like, does he have like...
I don't think they did.
He seems to have super strength, and like, this is very much, and I'm forgetting what other movie we watched where this was the case, but he seems to have the power he needs in that moment for the situation the movie has put him into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I took that as not necessarily Horus's power, but just the gods are stronger than
Run faster, he can carry a couple hundred pounds on his back and still run at a good speed, he has higher endurance.
That's just assumed.
Okay.
And his super aim.
But are they saying that the god of wisdom could have done that too? Could have like...
Probably he has more...
If he had a brain, he could have.
I would imagine that it's like stats. So like Horus is like got higher strength. We gotta go
he's got
geek
more
here.
XP.
We gotta go geek here. He's got more XP. So Toth has got more intellectual power and magic capacity. And Horus has
more
strength.
He's
like
He's more of a tank.
He's more of a tank character.
Okay,
yes, exactly.
Okay. That makes sense.
My mythology nerdiness is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah,
I'm just about to shake my head.
Don't act like you don't know what I'm talking about.
I know that's why I'm shaking my head. I could totally follow that conversation.
Oh my god. So at this point,
please.
At this point now, Beck is angry at Horus because Horus lied, and the goddess of love is feeling bad about it. So she's like, "Look, your girlfriend can't cross over until because she doesn't have anything to give. So give her this bracelet that I have that keeps the demons from grabbing me.
Right.
You can give this to her so she can at least we can do that for you. Give her something to move on to the afterlife. Right. So, and then Horace is like, no, don't do that, because then
you're going to get sucked into the land of the dead.
He's like, oh, whatever. I'm trying to redeem what we've done, so.
Which I never really understood why the demons were after her.
They weren't in mythology.
They explained it at one point.
Because, again, I wasn't going to question a lot because I only have like a base knowledge of the pantheon.
They did explain it, but it was
they said something about
something in the very beginning that Horace like killed demons for her, but I just did not understand.
Well, it was like there were like 42 demons that he killed to save her life, and now she has a bracelet with 32 diamonds on it or something, and as long as she wears it, the demons won't come after her because they're afraid of him?
Yeah, I never understood why the demons were after her in the first place that he had to kill them.
The way I interpreted it is the movie explained it. The way I interpreted it was this. This is probably dead wrong, but it seemed like she was doing good things for them, and then she left to become the goddess of love, and they want her back, kind of like she went for a better job and they need her back there, so they're constantly trying to grab her to pull her back. That's the only way I interpreted that. It's stupid, but that's how I interpreted it. Like, and somehow she was important to them and she left them to become a goddess, but she was already a goddess, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
I was really confused by this part. Like, why did these demons need her so bad? Except
it's not really important.
But it is, because she's sacrificing herself for Beck's love.
The demons needed her.
It's not important why they need her. They
just plot reasons.
Yeah, the movie needs her to be out of these scenes.
Literally, they
need to
teleport her.
She needed to go shoot Daredevil.
Yes.
So she gives him the bracelet and she disappears. She's out of the movie.
Yeah.
And then.
And by the way, somehow, and Seth at this point is putting together a new Voltron suit.
They cut away to this whole scene.
Because he's got the brain, and when he gets like Toth's brain, he's still Gerard Butler, though. He doesn't seem smarter.
No.
Like, he doesn't use it. Like, oh, now I know every move you're going to make because I have all this combat knowledge.
Well, doesn't use any of it.
Or, like Horace's eye. It's just there as a decoration to make him look cool, to, like, taunt him. Look, I got your eye. You know,
it's
like,
not even
like,
in his eye. It's, like, on his
cheek. It's on his side. Well, again, this is the problem with the stakes of the movie, because you're like, oh, if Seth gets all the parts of the gods, he's unbeatable. But then you're like, well,
he uses them to go talk to Ra.
He just has a cool suit.
Yeah.
He uses it to go talk to Ra.
And he goes up to the space, the steampunk spaceship.
Because they got to reuse that. Oh, wait, I was going to say reuse the set.
So Beck goes to the underworld or whatever.
Oh, right.
To give her the bracelet. And that's when Seth is talking to Ra, and he basically just stabs Ra. And it sets everything. He says something about he's going to, like, swallow the afterlife or something.
He wants to reshape creation in his own image, and he's going to use the Chaos God.
Well, he's going to, like, destroy it.
So that's two different explanations that neither one...
Are correct?
I have no idea. Neither one were what I thought what was going on.
Oh, okay. So none of them were in mythology.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I mean, there's constantly the Horus Set fight over who's going to rule Egypt. But
beyond
this,
that, there's nothing we can draw from mythology in the plot of the
Apophis does exist.
He does
want to create chaos and eat everything, but no.
From this moment on,
we're done. We're done. Okay. So
he basically says he's going to destroy the afterlife so that he can't die, so he's just immortal. He wants to just be immortal.
And then Jeffrey Rush, by the way,
he said, I want to reshape creation. That's what I thought he wanted to do.
I didn't hear him say reshape creation.
I don't think anyone knew what they wanted to do.
Because Ross said, he'll destroy creation, and he says, I can reshape it. And I thought he said
he stabs Ra, because now Ra's worried that Apophis is going to get free. So the conversation starts out with Seth saying to Ra, like, why did you make Osiris king? I wanted to be king. Why did you cast me out? And Ra saying, well, no, you both had your tests. I wanted to, we needed to find the good ruler. You know, you can be a good ruler. And now I want you to take my place here on my steampunk spaceship and defeat the demon every night. And Set is saying, I don't want to do that. I want to rule Egypt. I want to live on the lands that I conquered. I want to rule the world.
Forever.
I don't want to take your spot.
This is literally like a dad saying, like, I want you to take over the box factory. And the kid being like, no, I want to be a Bond villain.
But he says that he wants to rule these lands. And then 5 seconds later,
he's destroying
the world.
Yes. Right.
I did not understand that flip.
I didn't understand that either. And I don't know if the movie even understands that.
I feel like there was stuff that got edited out, which Lord knows I would not want this movie to be longer than it was, but I really do feel like there were several pieces Like, there must have been deleted scenes that would have explained
a lot more. It got muddled here, definitely.
Yeah. Well, and he does, Jeffrey Rush, before he gets killed by Seth, blasts him with his super space rifle. Is that in mythology? That's not. And Jeffrey Rush is like, no god should be able to take that many shots from my super space rifle. And then I think they're saying that because Seth has
the
body
part. Like super charged.
But that's the only benefit he seems to get from these is he can take...
A stats buff.
Yeah, exactly. So then he takes Jeffrey Rush's super space laser
I will say the super space laser is probably the only element that he gets from other gods that really does. That's a very powerful weapon. He uses that a lot.
That's
he's no smarter. He's no better at other things.
And back on Earth, Horus and Beck are like, well, what do we do now? And a flying couch shows up, and Horus is like, the goddess of love is helping us even from the land of the dead.
Well, I think he says Nephthys.
Nephthys.
Oh.
Seth's ex-wife that he killed.
Okay.
She had no interaction with Horus before this part.
But she, I guess, sent a flying couch.
But did she, or was it just like floating around? Because I got the sense it was just kind of floating there. I was like, how did you come to that conclusion? Nephthys helps us from the afterlife. And I was like, what? And that was just floating there. Because wasn't there like an earlier, like really early in the movie, like he floats down on it like before his coronation, like in a master shot, and it's flying there. And I was like, what the hell is that thing floating around? And then I expect like the Wizard of Oz in it, you know?
Well, this is where I thought Christy was right, that something was cut. Because I'm like, why are they introducing a flying couch?
Yeah.
Like, this just came out of nowhere. Like, it was just...
So they could do a super duper looper?
Maybe.
I didn't see any of this one, though.
And at the same time, Parallax from the Green Lantern movie attacks the Earth.
It's like eating the Nile or something.
It's just this giant cloud with teeth on it.
Yeah, just eating everything. Which I guess is the stakes of this movie, is that the giant cloud is going to eat everything. But it doesn't seem to cause a lot of panic amongst, like... Nobody like elevates like Horus and Beck.
They're still focused on killing Seth, and that's it.
Right. Yeah. They don't seem to be thinking about the giant cloud eating.
You can only do
Egypt.
One thing at a time. You only have one.
Maybe they think if they kill Seth, then they can get the laser gun and fight back. I mean, maybe that's what they think.
They did say they have to get. They said Horus said that Ra isn't dead, but he needs his laser gun to.
Did he say?
He does say Ra hasn't died. How he knows Ra isn't dead,
I don't know.
I thought Ra was dead.
So did I.
He wasn't there when Ra got stabbed. He's just assuming Ra is dead because the worm
sun
is attacking.
Out, yeah,
then, oh, that's right. Yeah. No, you're right.
I gotta be honest, at this point, I was barely half watching. I was just fully engaged, and I'm ripping on this movie on Twitter mode.
This is where things went really far. Because now they show up, and Beck and Horus show up to Rufus Sewell comes back in.
Yeah.
And they
force him to help them take an elevator to the top of the Rock Tower.
They force him to give an elaborate guided tour of this tower, which Rufus Sewell is just giving like he's a tour guide. And it's
the
like,
stats
dude,
of
Egypt
the tower.
Is getting eaten by a cloud. We don't care about your stats.
We've got 5,072 granite stones in the foundation. And I was like, what?
And what did... So they needed Rufus Sewell to show them how to work the elevator?
They needed him to get... I guess, just to...
Open the door to get in the elevator and get up to the top because Seth
was at the top of the tower.
So they just need him to be an elevator operator.
Yeah. But then Horus is like, well, you go on up. I'm going to crawl up on the outside.
Because they're fishing, Nick.
Because
this is part of the fishing.
And we have to say this again, too.
Now, once he gets his wings back, does that mean that they're going to go fly fishing?
So Beck wants to kill...
Turn his microphone off.
I know.
I think that was a joke.
Turn his microphone off.
But I'm not sure.
So they're in this elevator, and Beck wants to kill Rufus Sewell. And Horus is like, hey, man, chill out. Don't kill that guy. We need him. Then Horus immediately is like, hey, I'm out of here. I'm like Nick said, I'm going to climb up the side. And now, immediately, Beck is like, well, me and Rufus Sewell are going to fight, and I'm going to kill him. And I'm like, wait.
The stupidest line in the movie, too. Like when Beck goes to attack Rufus Sewell, Sewell's like, I'm wearing ornate body armor. That's my price to get into the afterlife, so you can't beat me without any armor, I guess. And then the kid pushes him off and says, oh, by the way, there is no afterlife. And Rufus Sewell goes, what? And then falls to his death. And I'm like, you just believe that? Like, it's like if I said to you, it's like if I pushed you off the cliff and I said, there is no God, and you went, like for some reason I know that enough where you believe me, and I would never do that to you, Alex. I love you, but you know I'm gonna chuck you off a building in this hypothetical scenario and say that to you. It makes no sense.
But Rufus Sewell does deliver it in like a Looney Tunes cartoon where he's like, whoa, whoa, what? You know, and you're like, what? I don't understand any of this. I don't understand why they couldn't kill Rufus Sewell once they were on the working elevator going up. I don't understand why they then could kill Rufus Sewell. It doesn't. Why Horace left?
Because vengeance is bad.
I guess that's it.
Except when it's not.
But then when you get vengeance, it's good.
And so then, yeah.
Horace is up there. Horace gets up first and starts fighting Set.
Yeah.
And is getting his ass kicked.
Yes.
And then...
Because he's got the laser staff.
Yeah. And this is where, like, Set gets him basically pinned down again and is going to kill him. And he's like, oh, you thought you could beat me? And he's like, no, I'm just the bait. And, like, Set would know what that means at all.
Yeah.
And then Bet comes, like, running over and, like, jumps on his back. Or he does something. I can't remember what he does.
And he takes the eyeball.
Yeah, he takes the eyeball out of it, yeah.
This is a really important point because I didn't understand this. How does Horace and Beck beat Set? Because what we have had presented to us as an audience in this, I guess.
It really is.
I don't understand.
Yeah, for me, like, this whole, I had a problem with this because, so... First off, like, why, if you're using bait, wouldn't you use Beck as bait and then have the god, like, sneak up on
Because Set the mortals in the audience, us, that's the real hero in this story.
We are
the ones that have to overcome.
So Beck gets the eye out of Set's forehead or whatever, and he, like, throws it. He's, like, falling off the building. He throws it towards... towards Horace.
I was hoping he was, like, just going
to
land
the throws it, like, way off, and it, like, goes bouncing out of the building, and there's, like, this slow-motion shot where Horace has to decide... like, to go after Beck or to go after the eye. So right. I'm like, well, logically, jump after the eye, stick it in your face,
and then fly
and save Beck.
Right.
But he, for some reason, goes after Beck.
Well, right. Because that's a callback to the rhinoceros fight, when the rhinoceros threw Beck off the cliff, but he landed on that ledge, and he said, next time save me, will ya?
Right. Yeah.
It's the power of friendship.
Well, that's what gives him his power back, is because he chose this journey,
to save the mortals
and to stand up for mortals.
So this is like a Dumbo situation where he didn't need the magic feather to fly?
Well, it was a dinosaur situation.
Okay.
He had the power the whole time.
Because he says it like, right? He's like, I thought I needed my eye to fly, but I just needed to... realize that I need to protect my people or something. This movie is dumber than I even thought it is.
That's so dumb.
Because he jumps off and grabs Beck. And then he transforms and he can fly.
Glee is a little disturbing.
That's so dumb.
Isn't it dumb?
I don't even have words. I didn't understand how he was flying.
The power of friendship.
That's the dumbest thing.
Because we needed another robot fight scene. Oh, every time they morphed, I was like, yeah!
Well, then he... Horace, even with just one eye, beats Gerard Butler, which the movie has presented to us as that's impossible.
Basically, there's no reason for the movie to exist in the first place.
Yeah, I don't understand how Horace beat Gerard Butler.
Because now he has the
power of friendship. That's crazy.
That's his test. He had to know that he was a worthy kid. Basically, Rob put him through all this crap for no reason because he wanted to see whether or not he would be a good king. Ra's the villain here.
That's nuts. And now when they reveal that Jeffrey Rush is alive again, at this point, I'm just throwing my hands. I'm like, I don't understand.
I am going to say this. The idea of the gold blood was stupid, but in the final scene where Gerard Butler's, like, bleeding out the gold paint, I was like, that kind of looks funny. Like, not good in a good way, but I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, all this gold paint's, like, appearing. He's like, oh, like, coughing it up. I was like, they really like selling the gold blood in that scene. It's stupid, but I'll give it to him.
Well, that's a lot of stupid. And a little kid gives Horace's eye back. Kid's like, hey!
Let's say this is the only other... I think there's three black people. Egypt is on the African continent, and we have only three black people in this movie, and the last one is a little girl who has no lines.
I think there's four.
Yeah, but two of them are Kenneth.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there's one in a crowd
One of the
shot,
sand snakes was...
But, okay.
Oh,
one of the huntresses. African American. And then she hands him the eye, and I was like, and there's this, and they cut to the other shot, and he's like, yeah, little girl gave me an eyeball. I can be a good king. And I was like, I was thinking to myself, I don't get into these politically correct, you know, arguments. But the simple fact of the matter is this guy is white as white can be, and he's supposed to be like a god and a king in Africa. And on the wide shot, they're all white. Except for this little girl. And I was like, they're all white. All of them. I was like, I don't get it.
Trump's Egypt. making Egypt great again.
Yeah. And now Horus doesn't need the power of friendship anymore because he's got his eye back.
Well, so. Now Beck dies out of the blue. Beck's like, impressed me.
Well, because they went
you're like the god of the impossible, and he
got stabbed
and then died.
He got stabbed by Set.
Or was it
Beru Fasul? I think it was by Set.
Maybe it was by Set.
But anyway, he got stabbed before falling off the building. Okay. And so, you know, Horus set him down. He's dying as Horus set him down and go be Set and then come back and he dies.
I remember in the shot, it was just his head and his arm.
Yeah.
And he dies and Horus is like, oh, like this look in his face, like, oh no, he's dead. And I was just, I said it out loud. I was like, they better cut to that master shot and it better just be a head and arm and nothing else. And like, Horus is an idiot and thought he could have survived that. Like, that would have been amazing.
And I liked when Horus.
You're fine. There's no gold pouring out of you.
Yeah. Horus says to Beck, like, hey, we make a good team.
And Beck's like, I'm dying now.
And Beck's like, not really, I'm dead. So, not great, actually.
Like, which I was just about to give the movie some credit. I'm like, I kind of like that. Like, he fulfilled his purpose. He's going to die and go be in the afterlife with his girlfriend. You know what? That's kind of nice.
For the first
But I knew moment, they weren't going to do that because they had him narrating in the beginning.
I completely forgot about that.
This is the first point where I kind of thought, like, okay, this movie's stakes and consequences are a real scattershot, but I'm like, maybe that's where this is going. And that would kind of be a non-traditional
ending. Yeah, I appreciated that idea.
Okay, and that's where then the movie starts setting up the stakes as, is that they're going to be together in the afterlife. Right. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's our new stake.
So he kind of gets his reward. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
And then, Jeffrey Rush shows up. And Jeffrey Rush says to Horus...
Well, he gives him back his laser sword, so he comes back to life, and he kills the demon thing, and then he's
starts blasting the laser, from this...
He grows huge and does it. Yeah. That was so funny.
And then Jeffrey Rush is like, hey, I owe you a favor. You can have whatever you want. And I guess whatever Horus wants is bringing Beck and knock off Selena Gomez back to life, and so...
He gets it.
And then even Beck is like... I thought this was impossible, which I think is all the audience going, yes, all this movie has been telling us is that impossible.
Even Horus said, like, yeah, it's impossible.
I
don't know what to say. Hurrah.
Yep. Cut to credits.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's one final...
Wouldn't it be really funny if he just gave him a Coke? Like, he's like, the one thing I want is impossible. And he like looks at them, kind of like bring him back to life. And he goes, oh, yeah. And then, like, there's this sound effect, like, boo, 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 and he disappears. And he's just holding onto a Coke. And he's like, you gave me a Coke. Well, I guess it is a hot day. And he, like, cracks it and drinks it. And that's the end of the movie.
I would have bought into that
product
pressure.
I'm shaking my head.
That would have been amazing.
Would have made as much sense as anything else.
I could totally rewrite this movie to make it brilliant.
I want to ask, here's a question. How much time do you think passes from when Beck and his girlfriend are brought back to life? Until the next scene we get.
Like 2 minutes?
Timing. In the world of this movie.
It's got to be a
year later, because doesn't she have a little pregnant bulge?
I didn't notice that.
I thought she had like a little pregnant belly.
Oh, I didn't see that. Because Beck is now Horace's chief advisor.
Yeah.
Which she mentions, like, as your chief advisor, I have to say. It's
like, we're thinking, maybe a couple months at least, right?
I would say a year, yeah.
A year sounds about right.
So it's been a year, and then Beck goes, oh, you know what? I still have this magic bracelet that can get your girlfriend out of the land of the dead. To which one would Horus be like, dude, where has this been for a year? You've had this you just forgot to mention.
I brought your girlfriend back.
Yeah.
You're holding onto this for.
But I did not think it was that long because the scene is his coronation.
So that would have to happen pretty quick.
So it would have, it would have to happen.
Because the coronation is just a formality.
Maybe it's only a few days, I guess.
Let's say a week.
I assumed, maybe like a week. Because they had to bring, they brought Toph back to life, but apparently couldn't bring anyone else back to life because
Nephis is there.
Okay.
Yeah, death has no consequences in this movie. You can die or not die, whatever.
Toph is back, Nephis is back, but he didn't bother to get his girlfriend back.
Yeah.
So that's not gonna be good. But to be fair, she did share a bed with the guy that tore his eyes out. So if they make a sequel to this, I'd see it.
Anybody want to make a guess at how long the credits for this movie are?
It has to be like
10 minutes. Really?
15 minutes.
A movie with that much CGI 15, 20, is at least 10 minutes.
It was 10 minutes. The credits were 10 minutes long.
I think I lasted 45 seconds.
I fast forwarded through them to see if there was anything at the end.
I did too, and there was.
I forget because watching the movie, I was like, "Oh, this movie's like 2 hours long." But I'm like, with all this CGI though, it's gonna be like 10 minutes of credits. So it's gonna only be like an hour 50.
It felt 4 hours long.
So here's our
really long.
Here's our so wrong it's right question. The budget on this movie was $140 million.
Really?
Budget was $140 million by Lionsgate. However, Lionsgate picked up a lot of international pre-sales and co-financing agreements.
From fake Egypt?
Basically, yeah. How much risk did... Like, as this movie was being released to theaters, how much risk did Lionsgate have on that $140? Like, how much did this movie actually need to make... Because Lionsgate was minimizing their risk with pre-sales and the co-financing agreements. Anybody want to make a guess of how like what the actual
what it would essential, have to have
made. What the risk was for Lionsgate? How much this had to bring in, or they were in trouble?
I'm gonna say $300 million.
Whoa. Wait, no. You're going
the opposite direction.
You're going the wrong way.
I don't know numbers.
140 to make.
Wait.
I understand.
How much did they get?
I understand. How much they get in take?
Yeah, how much did this have? Like,
I don't know. Was, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially like if
I'm a bad businessman, I would fail any business. I don't know money.
No,
I don't know numbers.
They minimized. So of the $140 million cost, they had some of that already covered.
Oh, I gotcha.
Before it was released with pre-sales.
So they didn't spend as much money as that.
They had already covered a lot, some of the costs.
So they already had some money. So
they'd already covered some.
Can I ask? Did they still wind up losing money?
Well, I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give it away. So,
how much did they put into that pot?
Well, how much did they not cover with?
How much did they need to make?
So, how much money did they put in?
I'm going to guess the risk was like $30 million, and they still wound up losing.
I'm going to say 90 then.
90.
Okay.
$140 million budget.
50.
50.
I was going to go 75.
10. Only 10 million. They only had a risk of $10 million.
When are they still releasing?
Wow. I was going to say 10 million. But I'm like,
no, it's 30. I was thinking like, yeah, I was going to say like three, like something really small, like three.
Lionsgate, for as terrible as this movie is, what an amazing job they did pre-selling it and bringing in suckers to co-finance it.
I want
to
see the movie about the making of the movie. Just the whole finance kind of.
Yeah,
a Wolf of Wall Street-esque sort of just. Total.
Yeah, I mean, to have a $10 million risk on this movie is crazy. Yeah, and it did not. Alex Proyas had said he actually wanted this to be the start of a cinematic universe. That's not happening.
Goodness.
It did not make enough money to.
But they made their money back, right?
They got their money back. Yeah.
I guess it would have been impossible not to.
It basically.
That's like the opening weekend of any movie.
Yeah. I mean, it essentially only had to make $10 million in the U.S.
Wait, to make $300 million.
Well, I don't know. I was.
I don't know. Things got worse?
When it gets to. Yeah, things got really bad. No, when it comes to like numbers and financials, that's the world I am. I am not a businessman.
Let's do a quick. Is it so bad it's good?
Absolutely, no. Absolutely.
Jack, you say yes.
Is this a shock to you?
This is the kind. This is the bad movie that I want to see. I want a movie that's taken seriously and sucks so bad that it makes you laugh out loud. And every time those guys molted into those robot things, I was like,
I think Jack's
that was the worst part of the movie.
I think Jackson might be
so bad. It was Hercules was stupid. This movie was so bad. It was
Hercules was so much better.
Yeah. See, I feel like
it was just generically bad, dumb. Like this had more moments.
Hercules was far more enjoyable than this.
It was a better movie.
Far more enjoyable.
No.
I feel like I need to take back my non-recommendation for Hercules. Like I would, if someone said to me, which would you watch, Hercules or Gods of Egypt? No hesitation, I would say.
Well, Hercules is a more quality film in that it has story structure and character development.
Not that much.
No, comparatively. We're grading on a curve.
But I'll chime in before we go around too, because this is the only movie potentially, or one of few movies where we've seen a trailer and we were all like, that's on the podcast. Like,
oh yeah,
blammo. Like this trailer played during the Super Bowl and it was like, line it up, put it on the calendar, got it, you know. But it's not crazy funny or like entertaining. It was like,
I thought it was hilarious.
I guess I Jack did.
I view films from that perspective.
It wasn't bad in a funny. It was bad in just like a failure way. Like they just failed at everything they were trying to do. I felt
this was a struggle.
I guess going in, I knew that this wasn't going to achieve anything, so my expectations weren't high. That helps.
I've seen a lot of bad movies.
I had no expectations for this, and it was still...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of bad movies in my life, but there have been two where I really, really had to try... Like, I had to focus to keep watching it. This and Jupiter Ascending, which I gave up and did not finish that movie.
Like, we did.
It was the same kind of thing.
Sadly, we did.
Yeah.
Where it didn't get better,
I really had to be like, oh, no, wait, no, I need to keep watching this, instead of... I was almost on Twitter like Nick, just kind of not paying attention to the movie. I'm like, no, I need to be able to talk about this. I need to watch it. If I didn't have to talk about this, I would not have made it through.
Well, I'm glad that I didn't save it. I watched it earlier in the week. I think like Wednesday I started and I finished it Thursday because I didn't want to save it till Friday night when I had to like watch the whole thing at once. Because I was
like the rest of us.
Yeah, I was getting myself into that. And then I'm like sitting there going, I have to sit here and watch this for the next 2 hours and it sucks.
Yeah.
But break it up, it's like a little easier to get through. But
I will be honest, I toyed with the idea like a week ago of being like, I'm just not going to watch it and show up and just be fully upfront about it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And spoiler, that will happen at some point.
Well,
it's just going to happen.
I've been on at least two episodes where I didn't see the movie. So at that point, you just kind of...
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And those are oftentimes very funny.
Yeah. Wait, which movies? Just out of curiosity.
Lucy.
I remember that one.
And there was the one that like Lucy, only you and Brian saw, and then me and Jack were on the podcast too. The one with... was it Katherine Heigl or?
Oh, was it One for the Money?
One for the Money. Never saw One for the Money.
No, One for the Money.
It was One for the Money.
That was one of you guys saw in the theater, and then Jack and we did like two episodes that day, so Jack and I just stuck around for the second one. Oh. But it's fun because you just sit there and listen to them describe it and be like, this is freaking crazy.
Lucy was the perfect movie for someone who had not seen it.
I don't see how you can sit in on a podcast of Lucy and not have seen it. I mean, that had to that had to feel like they were describing to you their acid trip.
There's like dinosaurs. Like, there's dinosaurs in this movie.
Yeah. As we were describing it, it felt like we were talking about like our 105 degree fever dreams that we're having.
I don't want to see it because of that. I don't want it. The movie I was imagining, I don't want that ruined.
I laugh every time I think of Sal Mineen's face during that episode because he was like, Sal was so funny on that show, and he was so like, for him to try to verbalize some of the things that we had seen in the film. Oh, we gotta get Sal in here again soon.
Yeah.
Now, as always, our rule, we don't officially preview what we're gonna have coming up because that's blown up in our face, but I think it's safe to say the new slogan of the show might be Gerard Butler makes bad movies and we make fun of them. So read into that what you will of what could be coming up very soon.
Like there's a lot of choices, though.
Like I said before the podcast to you, I was amazed when I sat down and watched this. I forgot Gerard Butler was in it. I was like, wait, our two choices this week were both Gerard Butler movies.
Honestly, I'd be willing to bet that if you were to say something to him about Gods of Egypt right now, he would have forgotten he was in this.
I've never seen that movie.
This movie was probably shot in like a month. I can't imagine it was shot very quick because it's all green screen.
That's probably a lot more than that.
Well, post-production took months, and I'm sure. But I mean, like,
you know what, actually?
To show up on set.
I'll say this, Jack. You may be right. He may have only been on set like a month because actually his stuff is kind of compacted.
I was reading somewhere there was like they shot in the Sahara or something. And I was like, shot on
a couple of exteriors. The marketplace in the beginning of the movie where he's running through the marketplace, but that seems to be a pain in the ass to go all the way to.
I feel like that
to go to the Middle East.
I thought it was shot on the weather deck.
I mean,
you could shoot that. You could shoot that in Arizona.
Maybe it was a green screen in the Sahara. They were shooting
in the Sahara. Yeah. Well, because even that marketplace looked like just like a plussed version of that generic town set Star Trek: The Next Generation uses.
Yeah, Planet Hell. Yeah,
the marketplace at the beginning. That was
all downhill. Planet Hell.
All right, so we've got much more.
The first shot of the movie.
They started strong, went downhill.
This is the best it's going to be.
Yeah. They need to make 300 mil with this sucker.
All right, we will be back very soon. We will see everyone here next time. All right, bye.